listeners, this is the Out of This World radio program with your host, Ted Marr, broadcasting from the studios of KKNW in Bellevue, Washington, on 1150 AM. The program focuses on out-of-this-world information, including psychic phenomena, UFOs, metaphysics, and predictions for the coming years in Seattle, the United States, and beyond. We will have only the best psychics, astrologers, and UFO researchers in the world on our program, and I guarantee, my friends, it will be the most interesting radio program you've ever listened to, as you will hear information here that you will simply not hear elsewhere. I'm also pleased to tell you that we are the fastest-growing psychic and metaphysical radio program in the world, and we now have listeners in over 60 different countries on all the world's continents. I welcome you all to Out of This World Radio International. You can also follow the show on Twitter at Ted Marr, T-E-D-M-A-H-R, all lowercase, O-T-W, uppercase, radio, and on Facebook at Out of This World Radio. Today we have a split show that I guarantee will be really out of this world. For the first hour from 2 to 3 p.m., we will have Laura Eisenhower, the great-great-granddaughter of U.S. President Dwight D. Eisenhower, who will be talking about, among other things, the secret agreement that her grandfather signed with reptilian aliens in 1954. For the second hour, from 3 p.m. to 4 p.m., we will be having Lee Moorhead on the program. She's one of the best psychics in the United States. For a list of upcoming guests, please see our website at www.outofthisworld1150.com. But before we go to our guests, I'd like to thank the many sponsors of this show, including my dear, wonderful friend Carol, who has been designing my website and providing moral support, and without whose friendship and help, this program would not have been possible. My dear friend Ann Nelson, business professor at Walla Walla Community College. My dear friend Heidi in Switzerland, who's been helping to arrange radio appearances by Eric von Doniken, another European, wonderful European psychics and UFO researchers. My angelic and earthly family, as well as my wonderful sound engineer, Eric Ryder-Burris, and my station manager, Eric Crema, without whose help and support, this program would not have been possible. I'd also like to, my listeners to please support Dr. Masuro Emoto and his wonderful assistant, Mikiko, in their Emoto Peace Project. The project is a wonderful project that works with children to bring world peace. For more information on their work, please visit their website at www.emotoproject.com. That's E-M-O-T-O, project.com. For those who'd like to call in and ask questions of either Laura or Lee Moorhead, we'll be taking calls from 2:30 p.m. to 3 p.m. for Laura or from 3:30 p.m. to 4 p.m. for Lee. The number to call is area code 425-373-5527 or 1-888-298-5569. You can also listen to the show live after the show at www.outofthisworld1150.com by going to the bottom of the page and clicking on either Laura Eisenhower or Lee Moorhead. For those of you who would like to meet some of the world's best psychic, spiritualist, and UFO researchers, from Friday, November 21st through Sunday, November 23rd, I will be hosting a psychic fair in Port Townsend, Washington, at the Fort Warden Conference Center. You can get more information about the conference by going to our website at www.outofthisworld1150.com. Dr. Masuro Emoto, the world's most famous water scientist, will be giving the keynote speech at the conference. The cost is only $299 for the three-day conference, including all meals, all accommodations, and all the free psychic readings you want from some of the best psychics. And as well, you'll be able to meet some of the world's best spiritualists, astrologers, and UFO researchers. This program is supported by listener donations. Even a dollar or $5 really helps. If you'd like to donate, please use PayPal and use our email address at outofthisworld1150@gmail.com to contribute. Or you can send your donations to me at Ted Marr in care of N. Williams, 6530 Elizabeth Loop Southeast, Auburn, Washington, 98092. I also do psychic readings, can read auras, and do remote viewing. If you'd like a reading, please call or email me. Now let's go on to our wonderful guest. Laura, are you there? Hello?
Yes, I am. How are you?
Okay, good. I wasn't sure for a minute. Good, good.
I never know what the phone
line. Okay, good, good. Laura Magdalena Eisenhower, are you the granddaughter or the great-great-granddaughter, just to make sure I have this right, of U.S. President Dwight Eisenhower?
It's just one great-great-granddaughter.
Okay, great. Okay, the great-granddaughter. Wonderful. She's an amazing person. We have her information on my website at www.outofthisworld1150.com, and I'm just going to abbreviate it because I don't want to take up too much more time. I do want to ask Laura a bunch of interesting questions. She's an astrologist, global alchemist, cosmic mythologist, and also, of course, is the great-granddaughter of Dwight David Eisenhower. For more than 15 years, she's been providing clairvoyant readings and healings for individuals with the assistance of many divination tools and astrology. And I know you have quite a bit to say, so I just want to get things going quickly here. Welcome to the program. I'm glad you could be on today.
It's wonderful to be on. Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, sure. Laura, how did you ever get interested in the field of psychic phenomenon and astrology and otherworldly, out-of-this-world topics?
Well, I've always been a little bit out of this world. Everybody always sort of noted growing up that I was one of those really out there type people. And I was always interested in anything related to off-planet, you know, type stuff. I was very interested in metaphysics when it came to health. And I think maybe health was where it started, because anytime I got sick or had any weird symptoms, I would just go on a journey within myself so I wouldn't have to go to a doctor, and I would just heal myself. And, you know, through the years growing up, just, you know, seeing things like the tool of astrology or the science of astrology, you know, I was immediately fascinated because I was already into, you know, sort of the metaphysical type world, and just, you know, the fact that we're multidimensional beings was very strong in my awareness. And so knowing that we all have our sun signs, you know, there's much more than just that. And so I had read a book, I think, when I was a teenager about how the planets associate with different organs of the body. And this got me interested in going into astrology, because I was thinking, wow, you know, medical astrology would be really interesting because, you know, we are affected by these planetary bodies, but, you know, we're made of them as well. The particles within the physical body are connected with them on top of our chakra system and our energetic meridians and, like I just mentioned, the organs of our body. And so I just, you know, got interested to see how relevant it was, and it ended up being very valid and very useful. And I figured out, you know, how to read charts by just looking at a few charts and having a book as a reference. And then a few more charts later, you know, kept at it, and then just went into all sorts of dimensions of it. And now I do it, you know, for a living. And the same thing was with the tarot deck. And so, yeah.
It's
been about 25 years or so.
Oh, that's wonderful. That's wonderful, Laura. Now, one thing I did want to ask you about is if you had any knowledge about your great-grandfather had signed some sort of agreement, secret agreement, with some reptilian aliens in 1954. Do you know much about that or what happened?
Yeah, I do. I mean, there's a lot to this. I'll try and summarize it because it could take hours.
Sure.
You know, this goes way back into our ancient history, you know, originating with the Anunnaki. Actually, the first contact with governments happened in 1926. And the first treaties with the American government happened with Roosevelt. And during the Second World War, there was, you know, contact with Hitler and the American government, first by the Nordics and then by the Greys. And supposedly these treaties are renewed every 10 years. So because we're talking about Eisenhower, it's better to just start with Roosevelt and Truman, and how Truman set up three-letter organizations to handle the UFO question and some of the things related to technology. And so by the time Eisenhower stepped to the office, because obviously he had tried to defeat Hitler and he was, you know, really bent on winning the Second World War, he became president. And I think realized very soon that the war wasn't exactly won, and that we were dealing with off-planet entities that I think he was aware of during the Second World War, but not in the way that it was presented to him when he became president. So with things like MJ-12 already established and Project Paperclip already established through Truman's administration, which allowed a lot of Nazi scientists to come into the United States with the technologies that the Nazi Party got or Hitler got related to mind control, trauma-based mind control. The technologies that Roosevelt got, which were more about alloys and metals and anti-gravity devices and things that weren't so much about, you know, the mind control aspect, a lot of it got out of control because these three-letter organizations became very much infiltrated by the Illuminati, and they pretty much started off that way, but it ended up growing and making it very difficult with what was happening on the inside as far as the different agendas and the service-to-self type beings versus the service-to-others type beings. And you don't have a whole lot of control as a president once, you know, you see how large the operation is beneath the position of presidency, which ended up getting pretty out of control around the time he stepped into office, and even further out of control when he was in office. And so the meetings supposedly were first with the Nordics, and they never reached an agreement because there was so much controversy about us getting rid of all, you know, the weapons. We are in a very vulnerable position, you know, still being in the Cold War. And the mentality back then had a lot more to do with, you know, who has the most toys, who's the most protected, and who has the most defense. And whistleblowers have said, which is where I'm getting all this from, and I'll name the whistleblowers, people like William Cooper, Phil Schneider, some whistleblowers that are connected to Super Soldier projects that have broken through some of their programming. I got this from, and then also some channelers like Lisa Renee. So this is not just something I read from one person just Googling around the internet. This is years and years of research with a lot of different people. And so if people want to see the more detailed version with the names and the people that I'm speaking of, you can go to my website, which I'll give, I'm sure, before the end of the show, and you'll see it on the left-hand side. But because I couldn't reach an agreement with the Nordics, during the time of that indecisiveness, the Greys ended up showing up, actually four different species in all they had contact with. And they were reptilians, some were Greys, we had the Nordics, and then I think the tall whites were involved at different phases of these meetings. And so when the Greys came, some of the whistleblowers actually considered it to be more of a surrender because of the weapons that they had. But back in Roosevelt's time, it was, and the origination of these treaties had more to do with letting them abduct a certain amount of individuals in exchange for these technologies. Now, the treaty was very similar when Eisenhower was in office, and it was presented in a similar way, but it absolutely got out of control. But we have to understand that that was already in the works during Roosevelt's administration. And the original individual that allowed the abductions was actually Winston Churchill, and I've gotten that from a few sources. And I know it's hard for people to believe this stuff. I think it's hard enough to even handle maybe even the rumors about Ike. So it's obvious that I've researched this a lot to be able to, you know, come up with even more to the story, but there's a lot of different things that confirm this. So they ended up making a deal when Eisenhower was in office, not something he was too happy about, because what ended up happening was the MJ-12 group ended up getting pretty out of control with the way they were going to handle the alien technologies. And so I just found out 2 months ago that Eisenhower set up a special section within the U.S. Marine Corps to keep an eye on them and to keep things in check. And it was written into an article, written into legal documentation, that if 50% of the Constitution had been compromised, that they would have legal authority to speak out and warn the people about the treason three and the corruption that was that is taking place. And so now they're doing that. And so Eisenhower set this up after those treaties because he knew that things would get out of control. And so he tried to invade Area 51, but it got shut down. He tried real hard to get things back on track. And so everybody sort of blames him, you know, for signing the treaties, but whistleblowers have said that he was siding with the Nordics, and because of all the advisors he was dealing with and these three-letter organizations that were set up to handle the ET issue, you know, he didn't really have a whole lot of choice because his position was to be president, you know, to handle the budget, to handle the masses, you know, the United States of America on a political level. To go into this exopolitical thing was not really what he was set up for, and so these things that were already put in place kind of had more of a say than he did. And so when you're dealing with that kind of thing, you can't be that person that says, you know, you're going to listen to my commands, because as we know, the way bills are passed are not totally and utterly the choice of the president. So anyway, he did all he could. But yes, there were absolutely, you know, visitations. He was also visited by beings from Venus in the 1960s, and a movie is coming out about that. I'm friends with the producer who verifies this is all a true story. And Eisenhower put these beings up, beings from Venus, Valiant Thor. He put them up in the Pentagon for 3 years to try and help them with their mission to offset what some of these negative agendas and these negative treaties were doing. And then, of course, the Joint Chiefs of Staff and the shadow government shut it down. So there's much, much more to the story, but that's at least a little bit of a brief summary.
Well, my friend, you've probably given me more information in the last 5 minutes than I've heard about sometimes in the last 25 years about what happened. So I appreciate that. I'm sure my listeners out there have lots of questions as well. And I certainly have a lot of questions as well. I appreciate you sharing this information with me. One of the things, can you hear me okay, Laura? Just a minute to make sure. All right. Anyway, Laura was mentioning that, let's see here, I've got quite a bit of notes. One thing that she mentioned was that Eisenhower felt compelled to sign this secret treaty with the reptilians in 1954. I have had another guest on my show several times, and he'll be back on again next month. His name's Scott Lemriel, a wonderful author, Hollywood writer and actor. Who's written a book called The Seres Agenda. It's spelled S-E-R-E-S. And he states in his book that Eisenhower was actually blackmailed into signing this agreement with the reptilians in 1954. And the way the reptilians did it is that they said to Eisenhower, they said, look, we'll give you this military technology so you'll be advanced thousands of years ahead of the Soviets, but if you in exchange for us studying and abducting you, but if you don't agree to it, then we'll just give the technology to the Russians, and they'll become the preeminent power on Earth. So Eisenhower felt compelled, according to Scott Lemriel, he felt compelled to sign it. But what President Eisenhower did not know at the time was that the same exact time that these reptilians were in the White House visiting him, offering him this treaty, they were also over in Moscow doing the same thing with the Russians, the Soviets. So it was a scam on their part. And now we're at 2014, we're 60 years on. And you look at the history of the United States and the world since 1954, and we've had war after war after war after war after war. And I think the so-called help these reptilians have given our government has done nothing but harm us. The reptilians themselves, from what I know, feed off negativity. They feed off war. If this planet were to suddenly break out in an atmosphere of peace and all the wars stopped, the reptilians would be very unhappy about that because they feed off the war. The more humans that are killed in these wars, the better, according to their viewpoint. But yes. Laura, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Oh, good. Welcome back. Welcome back. One of the things you mentioned was that. That Roosevelt had originally signed the first agreement. I had heard President Franklin Delano Roosevelt had met with these reptilian aliens in 1934 on a he was at Panama Canal of all places on a boat in the middle of the canal, far away from the prying eyes of everyone. Do you remember do you know anything about the date or when and where he met with them?
I'm not exactly sure about where. I do believe the year was. I have it here. I think it was 1947 that it actually got signed, but actually, hold on 1 minute.
Okay.
Yeah, my years don't come to my head as quickly as I would like. Roosevelt,
that's okay.
All that was. Yeah, actually, 1941 was the year that the Pleiadians pulled out of the treaty with Hitler, and I do believe that. It was, 1934, it was signed with Roosevelt, July of 1934, is what I heard.
Okay. That's what I had heard, too. I didn't know a month, but I knew it was 1934, and they'd met in the Panama Canal, and he had signed. And you mentioned Winston Churchill was the original person who had agreed to the abductions. Do you know much more about that or what year it might have been?
Not quite sure what year it was, but supposedly Hitler, Crowley, and Churchill were all a part of it, and it was basically really anchoring the negative alien agenda. And, of course, the way it's presented has a lot to do with the rewards that those individuals get and what it means for them and what they're going to get out of it, and they're not really thinking about, you know, what it's doing to the human race. As long as they benefit, what do they care, right? So, I'm not quite sure what year that was, but this is when, you know, we really hear, I mean, people hear a lot about Aleister Crowley, and he really got immersed into all this. And the rituals that take place within the Illuminati has a lot to do with, his position and all that, which, of course, also connects to these treaties because the reptilians also, you know, work through these power structures and the royal families and, do these, rituals. And it's confusing because there's, like, seven different species of reptilians. We hear the ones that David Icke talks about, the shapeshifters, in the royal family and in, you know, the Illuminati. But then the treaties, you know, usually come from the Greys, but the Greys are controlled by the reptilians. And, yeah, so I guess Churchill just decided that it was worth giving up lots of human lives. And he, from what I know, wasn't blackmailed. He knew the full picture. He was down with the whole agenda. And I hear so many positive things about Churchill and a lot of people talking positively about him. I don't think anybody really has a clue that he was involved in all this.
That's just amazing. Before we get into some more details about that and also your wonderful work, I want to tell people briefly that there is help on the way for us. I don't want to leave people hanging to think that we've got a reptilian alien underneath every rock, because the white light is stronger than the dark. There is another group of extraterrestrials out there called the Galactic Alliance. They look just like us. They're comprised of 435 million planets, approximately 7 trillion individuals. They're mostly human, all benevolent. They have technology and are spiritually advanced tens of thousands of years ahead of us, and their technology actually is far, far more advanced than even the reptilians. And they are working behind the scenes now to help us, and help is on its way. We'll be having a program on that next month with Scott Lemriel and also Dr. Micah Sala, one of the world's best UFO researchers coming from the island of Hawaii. But going back to what we were talking about, Laura, you mentioned something about Eisenhower set something up, a legal document that if more than 50% of the Constitution was compromised, that military action would ensue. Is that what you said? Or?
Yep, and that's exactly what's happening. There's a individual named Randy, otherwise known as Captain K, who has recently come out, who reached out to me and said, basically, if it wasn't for your great-grandfather, you know, we wouldn't be where we are today. We would be, you know, completely and totally enslaved. And he said, I'm a representative. I am a retired Marine officer of the special section that your great-grandfather set up to keep the MJ-12 boys in check, is how he put it. And basically... He is under legal authority. He's not even a whistleblower. He is under legal authority to disclose to all of us, and this is, like I said, very recent, all the atrocities and all the things that have gone on. Now, when we think about the treaties, you know, well, what is it all about? What is the bigger picture of what it all means? It really has to do with the colonization on Mars, and I was recruited to go to Mars in 2006. So another big reason he reached out to me is because I refused to go, and he said, thank God you did that, because, you know, it could be very easily misunderstood that this is a good thing to do, because, you know, it might mean that I save my life and I don't go down with everybody else, but it would also mean that I'm totally controlled and that I've basically, you know, chosen my life over doing what's right. So he, you know, really was very rewarding to me about that. And so what this all equates to is, this particular individual served on Mars for 17 years as a part of the special section of the U.S. Marine Corps. And because he's under legal authority, it's going to be very easy for him to prove this. And so he's allowed to share, because what was set up, which was signed into law by Eisenhower, was that if things had gotten to a certain point where 50% of the Constitution was being denied, at least that amount, that... they would be able to share all this.
Forgive me for interrupting you there, Laura, but some people argue now that a lot more than 50% of our constitutions is frankly gone. How else can you explain the rampant violations of the Fourth Amendment by our federal government with complete NSA surveillance? Every phone call, every email, every text, every internet communication, everything is recorded in the huge, massive, and some people believe illegal facility outside of Salt Lake City. It's a massive structure. It basically swoops in all information, and it's like they don't care about the Fourth Amendment, which gives American citizens for their right of privacy. And the courts don't seem to do anything about it. Everybody just says, "Oh, we need this," but ultimately, I think much of the Constitution's already gone.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's not about that we're just reaching that point. It just says that in Article 21 of the Special Section Special Code, when 50% of the constitutional guarantees of the U.S. are not functioning, to speak out publicly and warn against traitors and treasonous behavior against the USA. So I think that probably happened decades ago. that something should have been done. But the thing is, they're under legal authority. But at that point, and when we look at, you know, what everything's up against, you know, our law enforcement should be doing something about this. Our president should be doing something about this. This special section is so hidden and so compromised. So they can only really play on the inside, and this is where the intel wars are. They can only try and keep things in check on the inside. But eventually, because, you know, the article has already been established and 50% of the constitutional guarantees not functioning happened so long ago, they needed to give the officers the free will choice to decide if they were going to speak out or not. That might have been where the delay was, because we're talking lots of threats, we're talking murder. I mean, we're talking, when you look at the whistleblowers that have come out that have not survived, it's not as easy as we'd like to think. But somebody did volunteer, and this is the individual that I'm in contact with, and he is speaking out, and he's got higher officials, he's got his chain of command, that are going to be proving that this is all legal. But what I think they tried to do, because he ended up serving on Mars for 17 years, is they have to prove, you know, and come up with something, you know, in connection with this breakaway civilization, because this is the larger agenda that we're dealing with. No matter how many people they arrest on the ground here, there's still a Mars agenda and people with condos on colonies on Mars. And so when he served on Mars for 17 years, a huge reason why they had to wait was because he had to recover his memories. What ended up happening when this special section was set up is that they had a benevolent super soldier program set up to offset the super soldier programs that were using humans as weapons and assassination tools, using trauma-based mind control technology to make them engineered to be that way. He was engineered to be a super soldier to offset all that. So his programming wasn't trauma-based mind control. They created a sub-personality, and these officers have needed to regain their memories. And some of their programming included being on a spiritual path and being able to come to terms with the role that they played, so that they would have the ability to speak out and say that things like the Mars colonies exist. Because when they come out and speak out, which they're doing now, Captain K, you know, they're not just talking about, you know, the Constitution. They're talking about the Mars agenda. They're talking about the super soldier programs. They're talking about what's been happening in underground bases. And for anybody to be that up close and personal like these guys have been, you know, they've had to recover. I mean, he's had his limbs blown off so many times and regrown with the technologies that they have. He's gone through 2 decades of therapy. And so you have to make sure that you've got your sanity about you before you present these things, because the other officials in the higher up, you know, created this crew to be able to do that, because they can handle it because of the way they're engineered.
Sure, sure. This is bringing into so many questions, Lauren, and thank you so much for sharing this with us today. For those of you who are just tuning in, this is the Out of This World radio program with your host, Ted Marr, on KKNW 1150 here in Bellevue, Washington. For those of you who would like to call in, would you mind taking some questions if people have questions, Lauren?
Oh, I'd be happy for that, sure.
Okay, great. Our phone number here is area code 425-373-5527. And for those calling outside the United States, I believe the country code for the U.S. is 001. If you're in West Washington, the phone number here, toll-free, it's 1-888-298-5569. Going back from what I've heard, though, is that one of the reasons why the reptilians abducted humans was to ultimately control us. And the abductions now have currently mostly stopped, I've been told, because they've developed now the technology in order to do that. If you look at, there was an NSA memo leaked by Edward Snowden, I believe it was earlier this year, in which he claimed that the tall grays had control of most of the U.S. government and many corporations. And a lot of people thought that was a joke, but if you look at the news conferences that some of our leaders give, it makes you pause to think. For example, 2 months ago, President Obama was at a news conference with the Malaysian Prime Minister in Malaysia talking about the MH, the Malaysian flight that disappeared. If you looked at him carefully, he spoke in a monotone with his eyes wide open. Now, as if he was controlled. At many other news conferences, he also looks the same way. I'm not saying he is controlled, but there is that question that's raised. I think that people have to remember that. I've also heard, too, that many of our alphabet agencies, the NSA, for example, is completely controlled by the reptilian aliens by one way or another. They also have the reptilians, I've been told, also have the technology where even though they look human, they have a force field around them that makes them look that they're actually reptilian, but they have a force field around them that makes them look human. And you can always tell because they have a smirk on their face and a very beady little eyes. But
I like the bushes.
I'm sorry, what?
I just said like the bushes.
Well, that's true. You can, you know, I mean, you can just pick your leaders. And also, too, you have to look at their decisions, too. For example, the Prime Minister of Japan, and I have a lot of people listening in Japan now to this program, the Prime Minister of Japan, Shinzo Abe, before he became Prime Minister, promised to go to solar and wind power to try everything to get out of nuclear energy. What happens after he's elected? In Fukushima, he continues with nuclear power. He's requested more nuclear power from the U.S., and he's done absolutely nothing to clean up Fukushima. Fukushima is a huge problem. 85,000 gallons of highly radioactive water is being dumped into the Pacific every day. But do you read about that in our media at all? Nothing. Does the Japanese government have any plans to remedy Fukushima in the foreseeable 100 years in the future? Nope. It's as if they want to kill us off. And by the American media, by being silent about it, is complicit in wanting us to eat radioactive tainted fish and products and so that we'll die. I don't know. I don't know what other explanation there is. We have been getting help, though. I know I've heard from the Atlantic Alliance that they've actually cleaned up much of the Pacific. So there was a huge plume of water coming from Fukushima that was supposed to hit the shores of Washington about 3 months ago. And guess what, friends? It's all gone. None of it's there. The water is clean. There's no radiation. And the scientists in this country, in the United States, are all scratching their heads saying, well, what happened to it? Well, what happened to us is that we got help from outside. They're not stepping in to take credit, but just saying that they don't want us to kill ourselves, so they've taken it out. But getting back to your great-grandfather, I think Eisenhower was a good man who tried to do the best he could, you know, given the circumstances, certainly.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, Go ahead.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. No, I was just going to say it was an unbelievable time to just be in that position. He had about 8 heart attacks, so he definitely had a difficult time with it all.
Oh my God. Now you said a breakaway civilization on Mars. Do we have I've heard about our bases on the dark side of the moon. I know about that, and you say that this country has secret bases and living quarters on the planet Mars as well?
Yes. Something was set up in the Eisenhower administration from some of these deals that had to do with colonization on other planets. It's called Alternatives 1, 2, and 3 were basically how it was presented. And Eisenhower set up something called the Jason Scholars to sift through all the different information about alien technology and what these different groups were about and different races were about. But, of course, you know, everything is getting infiltrated by, you know, this reptilian agenda that's been in the works for thousands of years, you know, basically Anunnaki-related, and further into our galactic history is where it all began. So Alternatives 1, 2, and 3 were established as solutions for our future. And it was very manipulative because these solutions are more geared towards, you know, what these technologies are going to do to the planet and what needs to take place, you know, for some to be protected, the elitists. To be protected. It started off pretty benevolent, some of these things. Alternative one being all about, you know, well, actually it ended up being two alternatives. The creation of underground bases and then going off planet. That's alternative three. They made a movie about it, I think in the 60s or 70s, called Alternative Three, and it's all right. About going to Mars, but it was somewhat fictionalized. This is very, very real. There's lots of whistleblowers now that are getting more out there. Andrew Bishago, who was a part of Project Pegasus, teleported there as a child. Captain K, of course, served there for 17 years. Michael Ralph served there. They have very, very similar memories. They don't even know each other, but they have unbelievably advanced technology. So anyway, this Alternative 3 was a breakaway civilization in the event of catastrophes and cataclysms. And I was actually recruited to go off-planet in 2006. And this is how I've been able to piece the dots together. I've connected with other whistleblowers, and we've all put these different pieces together. With compartmentalism, each of these projects and groups don't really know what the other one's doing. But when you step back and see the full picture, what it basically equates to is that Alternative 3 got infiltrated and became a breakaway civilization that the elitists would go to under the command of their overlord, reptilians, you know, and their hybrids of them, so they have that link. And then basically create a new world order on Earth through either full-on extermination, which is what we're seeing with what's happening to our food and the radiation in the water and everything going on, or you know, the total enslavement, which has to, or the total enslavement of the human race, which has to do with the weather modification, the chemtrails, the nanoparticles in the chemtrails that link us into an artificial intelligence system. And so I refuse to go because I have a mission to, you know, help us to awaken to our full DNA potential and to help us to understand what these times are really about, because our DNA and the stargates on Earth are linked, and they don't want us to achieve this expansion and this ascension. And I know that term is very misunderstood, what that actually means. And so this other agenda, this artificial timeline was set up, which meant that certain individuals would go to Mars, certain individuals would go into underground bases, and the rest of humanity would be left vulnerable to all sorts of attacks, you know, bioweaponry, Ebola, chemtrails, everything under the sun. And because we're dealing with two different controller groups, you know, one side wants us to just be extinct and to be wiped off, and the other just wants to control us. You know, Captain K and these folks connected to the USMC special section are trying to be that that force that will get rid of both those agendas and get the technologies back so we can clean up this planet and get everything back on track. And so that's what Eisenhower set up. So he didn't just warn us about the military-industrial complex. He actually created something within the military to address all this. I wish they spoke out sooner, but they are now. And I agree with you. I mean, I'm not a person that goes into fear, doom, or gloom about our future at all. I never have. I don't like what's happening, and I don't appreciate. I mean, it's horrific. It doesn't mean that I'm not affected by the suffering. I mean, just like anybody else. But we do have a lot on our side. There's a lot of higher beings that are here to assist us, and there's folks within the military that are on our side, and we're going to find out more about it through people like Captain K, who is going to have more in his chain of command coming forward soon. But, yeah, so I was recruited, and that's how I know that it's true, because I went through it, and I had to break free, and it was really difficult.
Wow. Well, I've got so many questions. How did they approach you to go to this colony on Mars? Did they get a visit from these men in black someday, and they said, meet us at the coffee shop, or how did it happen?
Well, Andrew Bishaga said that I was pre-identified before birth in Project Pegasus, which is different than what I dealt with. I think they used remote viewing or chronovision to, you know, discover my role before I was born. But then I was pre-targeted to go to Mars to, I don't think before birth necessarily, but I was targeted from a really young age, and everything that I tried to manifest in my life, you know, pretty much failed. And when I finally gave up and I said, whatever forces are trying to control me, I need to, you know, just see who they are and what they're about, because I can't fight against this anymore. It's too powerful. They were just trying to steer me in a certain direction. So when I just followed where it was steering me, I just ended up back in Washington, D.C. I was living back at my mother's house, and I ended up going to Virginia, to Charlottesville. And I went and took my kids camping, and it was sort of an event going on. I needed just sort of a break, and I guess I was tracked because an individual approached me, and we started to date each other. And he was going to secret meetings in Washington, and so when he would come visit me in Washington, he would go to these meetings. And he was basically telling me that, you know, we have a plan to go to Mars, you're included. You know, the target date is 2012. We're going to be taking something called an ARC, spelled A-R-C, and that it was for my protection, and it was set up to be like a very positive type thing, but I wasn't allowed to tell anybody. And then I got really curious and very kind of suspicious, because he was acting really weird. He would disappear for days. He would be answering phones and not remembering, you know, where he went, and I think they just said codes over the phone, and he was acting like you know somebody in a movie, you know, and he called them his handlers, and I was like, okay, wait a second, this is reminding me of movies I've watched. At the time, there was no Project Camelot or other whistleblowers talking about Mars, and I just had this feeling that because he was dealing with off-planet entities that were instructing him of what to do about going off to Mars, and he was my partner, and he was dealing with this hidden group, I thought that this was artificial telepathy, and these were my labs, and these weren't even legit EPs. And then I got the names of all the people. Yeah, I got the names of all the people he was dealing with, and I started to do research about them, and I found out a lot, and I had a dream about what was really going on, and then ended up starting to break away from it all. And you know, and the whole deal is that, you know, they are connected to MJ-12. They have their hands on alien technology, and they've taken it upon themselves to manipulate certain individuals to get them to go with their agenda, and it's called patriotic programming. They convince you that you're doing something good for the planet, when in actual fact, it's connected to the New World Order agenda, and I figured that out and got away.
Laura, I'm so glad you got away from that. We have a caller on the line. Would you like to take a quick call, brief call from someone in the audience?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, great. Welcome to Out of This World Radio.
Hello?
It's Scott.
Oh, yes. Hi. Hello, Scott?
Yeah, hi, Ted. Hi. Hi, Laura.
Oh, hello, Scott. Welcome to the program.
Laura, I actually met you once at a MUFON Orange County conference sometime back when you did a presentation about your book. And I met you afterwards. You probably don't remember me. It doesn't matter. But I just
I
was going to tune into this show today. I knew you were going to be on, and I wanted to say it takes a lot of courage to do what you're doing. The other thing I wanted to mention, I think Ted knows this, there's a certain kind of, and I wanted to impart this to you if you're not already aware of it, you probably are, there's a certain kind of protection being afforded people in work in disclosing their research into purposefully hidden truth. And it does have to do with subconscious implants, you know that. But there's a certain kind of protection being afforded from a group that's from very far out of town now that have decided to make an intervention here recently, just the last 3.5 years, to be change the destiny of this planet. So I wanted to bring that to your awareness. If you're not aware of it, there's a certain kind of protection that people in the work we're doing have now.
That's excellent. Yeah, I feel more protection than I ever have in the last couple of years. So.
Oh, good. Good. Scott, what kind of protection? Could you share that with us, please?
Well, this is Laura's show. I just wanted to, suggest that to her and make her aware of it if she's not, because she'll be coming across that soon in a more direct way anyway.
Excellent.
Yeah. The thing that I work with most, Laura, is a primordial sound vibration, or hue, because when it's done, it connects you through the pineal gland to the benevolent beings out there and on many levels and many worlds and many dimensions. And it can only connect to that which is benevolent. It is impossible for anything negative to penetrate it in any way. So I work with that exclusively now in all of my explorations into the unknown. And I'm able to do that with complete protection from any concern whatsoever about a hidden government, the reptilian race, or their agenda, or the tall grays, the short grays, or any other race out there. Because the prophesied destiny for the planet has recently been altered permanently, fortunately for us.
Well, Scott, I think for the benefit of our listeners, and Laura, I will give a demonstrate. I believe that what Scott's referring to is the hue, and I'll just mention it briefly for our listeners. It's the hue. It's like Om, but it's a meditative sound that you make, and it sounds like this. Hue.
Right. It has no ownership. One thing I want to make clear. There's no organization on Earth, off-world, in any other reality that owns or possesses, copyrighted, or patent this word. It's impossible, and they would never attempt to do it. So this is a universal thing that people can utilize from today forward and get beneficial results from it. And the only
Absolutely.
Way to know that is by working with it a little bit.
My friends,
only works into the positive. I just wanted to share that with you, Laura. I don't want to take up your time.
Well, thank you so much. Feel free to send me an email, too, and connect with me directly if you like.
Okay, we'll do so. Thanks, Ted.
Great.
Okay, thanks, Scott. Have a wonderful day. Thank you for calling. One thing I wanted to mention to you. Are you there, Laura? Can you hear me okay?
Yep.
Okay, good. I've read a lot of things written by Alex Collier. He's an Andromeda contactee. And he, back in 1996, said that the reptilians actually refer to the humans on this planet as the Ptah. And they have also got a legend. The reptilians do time travel, and they've gone to the year 3600 in our Earth years, and found that we humans kicked the reptilians all off this planet. And reptilians know this history. They have great respect for us. They actually call us royalty, as powerful spiritual beings. And some think, the Andromedans think, that the reptilians have come back, time traveled back to this point in history to try to get us enslaved, which won't work, but they're trying to do it so that we don't fulfill our destiny as becoming a powerful spiritual race.
Right, absolutely.
Yeah,
I mean, it's interesting because we get so lost in the fear-mongering. I mean, I don't even like to use that word, but I mean, the
right.
propaganda of all the different catastrophes and all the doom-gloom stuff that could be possibly happening. But if we could just take all that energy that we're focusing in on that and turn it into focusing it on ourselves and really what we're here to do and how we're really meant to unify and awaken these dormant abilities, then, you know, we wouldn't be challenged, because, I mean, this is where we're being pushed to the edge. But as we're being pushed to the edge, I mean, I encourage people to use it all as a weapon. When you look at the sky and you see the chemtrails, let it be a tool of your own empowerment instead of something to sink your energy and, you know, allow them to kind of get one up on you and take your energy and your power and your ability to create a positive future. And so I look at all the negatives, and when I see them, I let it empower me. I let it remind me of what I'm here to expand into, what I'm here to awaken people to. Because every time we look at those things, if it sinks our vibration, if it puts us in fear and anxiety, we're giving them exactly what they want.
Well, you're absolutely right. I have to tell you, back on July 25th, we had a wonderful intention experiment with Dr. Masaru Emoto of Tokyo, Japan. Do you know Dr. Emoto's work?
Yes, I do.
Wonderful. Well, anyway, he's done water intention experiments, and for my listeners who are not familiar with this work, he has taken, for example, two glasses of water, and in one glass of water, he's had an audience, a group of people, focus love and positive thoughts to that glass of water. And then in a second glass of water, he's asked his audience and participants to focus negative thoughts to the second glass of water. In the first glass of water that's been focused on positively, he's looked at the molecular structure of the water under an electron microscope and found it's coalesced into beautiful crystalline structures. Whereas the second glass of water, which has negativity associated with it, has completely disintegrated. And so on July 25th at about 3:30 p.m. Seattle time, I asked Dr. Emoto whether that would work for conflict as well, and he said yes. So spontaneously, both he and I and all my listeners around the world did an intention experiment where we sent good positive thoughts to both the Israelis and the Palestinians in Gaza for them to stop fighting, at least for a short time. And lo and behold, when I got home to where I was staying that night at about 8:30 p.m. Seattle time, I turned on the CNN television, and the Israelis and Palestinians had just agreed to a spontaneous 12-hour ceasefire that started at within a half hour, about 9 p.m. Seattle time. And so that it did work. And I've been doing this for several weeks since that time, and they've had a series of three-day and sometimes longer truces in the area. So I know that it does work, and it can help. The other thing too that people don't realize is that the current conflict in Iraq is being engineered by a group called ISIS. Now, a lot of people don't know the background of ISIS, but guess who funded ISIS last year? Well, it was Senator John McCain, and with the help of the president, we funneled tons of military equipment and hardware and lots of money to the ISIS rebels. We trained them in Jordan, and now they've turned against us in Iraq, and guess what we're doing in Iraq? We're giving money and weapons, and we're also fighting, and we're also shooting weapons at the ISIS as well. So it's like if we had just stayed out of the conflict completely originally last year, none of this could have happened. And but I believe that we're serious, we're powerful spiritual beings, and we can do good in the world if we so choose.
Absolutely. And that's what's so important for us to remember, because there's a reason we're being targeted, and we just have to know what that reason is, and we need to not allow anybody to take it from us and to just really protect that part of who we are. I mean, the social engineering, these agendas are immersed in our culture. We're born into it. It's the first thing that we really face. I mean, and it becomes a part of our conditioning. And so it's a difficult process, but it's like an animal leaving the zoo. You know, it's born in captivity, but it knows its real habitat is outside the zoo. And even though it feels a little daunting, once you go outside of the cage, you start to realize that it's the most natural and familiar thing ever. You just got to get yourself out of the zoo cage and recognize that it's not your true home. And that's the matrix that we're in, that the reptilians control.
Right, exactly. And there's something else, too, I want to mention to my listeners, especially those in the United States. You know, a lot of people I know are having a hard time out there, either with their jobs or they're looking for jobs. I don't trust the government unemployment figures. I think they're much higher than they say they are on the so-called mainstream media. And I think that if if the government spent the monies that they have in their budgets truly for our needs, that we could have a much better country. And I'll give you one example. It was either last year or the year before last where the Federal Reserve has said that they had lost $1 trillion in their accounts. And they couldn't explain where it went. Do you think, Laura, that some of that money may have gone to some of these black projects, including the secret Mars base?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
You know,
I mean, there are trillions of dollars. I mean, and there's all sorts of illegal drug rings and child abduction rings. I mean, they do the most illegal things ever to fund these projects and, you know, everything you mentioned.
You know, for those who, you know, for those who've had small businesses and they're closing because they couldn't get a loan, for those out there who's out of a job and can't find work, you know, it kind of makes you wonder. All you have to do, if you want to look at a country similar to the United States that spends more of their GDP on human needs rather than on endless wars, is Canada. Canada's standard of living is 50% higher than ours. Their crime rate's half of what ours is. And to my friends across Canada who I know are listening, you have a wonderful country. And it's not that the United States necessarily it doesn't have money. I think we've got plenty of money, but unfortunately, a lot of our budget is spent in these secret projects. How many Americans do you think American citizens are on the moon? Do you know how many are there up there right now?
I have no idea, but I know that there's like potentially millions on Mars or millions that have been to Mars. I mean, I would say the number on the moon could be in the thousands easily. I mean, maybe even more. I mean, there's just so much going on, more than we can even possibly comprehend. And we get the NASA stories, and it just puts us in this limited perspective. It's very hard to grasp what we haven't heard about. I'm sure if we learned that dinosaurs existed right now in 2012 and we never heard about it before, we'd say, absolutely, that's crazy. How could that be? Until you start to see evidence, and there is evidence. There's all sorts of evidence that there's people on the moon and Mars. And the two bases between Mars and moon are very connected. They work together, and this moon is known to be an artificial moon, where a lot of the mind control and control of the emotional body of the feminine is played out as well. So I'm not quite sure what the living situation is there, though. I don't know any whistleblowers that have been on any colonies on the moon. I don't believe that people are going to be colonizing the moon like they will be Mars, and you know, because they already are on Mars.
Well, I think what happens is that once people go there, they simply don't come back. We've got about 2 minutes maybe left on the program, and I just wanted to I want to give you the last minute, Laura, to wrap up today's wonderful interview we've had. But for those who are just tuning in, this is the Out of This World radio program with your host, Ted Marr, broadcasting on KKNW 1150 here in Bellevue, Washington. We will be going to South Carolina here in a few minutes for our next guest, Lee Moorhead. She's one of the best psychics in the United States. She's a wonderful, incredible lady. I'm sure you'll enjoy listening to her. But we've got about a minute left, Laura, and I want you to wrap up your interview today, please.
Well, first of all, I want to thank you so much for having me. And for anybody that's interested in some of the things that we covered, you can go to my website, cosmicgaiasophia.com. I have some written papers about the treaties, some articles about the Mars recruitment, and some information about the whistleblowers. And I do readings and sessions to help people get empowered and to help them to really step up in their purpose and help to affect change for the better for all of us and for this planet that we're on. And, yeah, you can find me on Facebook, Laura Magdalene Eisenhower.
And on behalf of all my listeners and humanity, thank you for not going with the breakaway civilization in Mars and decided to stick it out with the rest of us here on planet Earth.
Oh, well, thank you so much. I wouldn't want to be anywhere else because we're all, you know, together in this and we're all connected and we got to get things on track. And I'm grateful to be here, and I'm grateful for all of you. So thanks for listening.
All right, great, Laura. Well, stay tuned, my dear friends. We'll be going to South Carolina in a few minutes for our next guest.